guests on a Monday. Dave's out today. He'll be back tomorrow. Today he is helping Phoebe move back from her freshman year at Kansas. So been there, done that myself many times. It's a heck of a day, I'm sure. Hopefully Dave will be tired enough to get back home and get some sleep and then be rested for tomorrow's show. But we'll obviously look forward to Dave being back here tomorrow. The rest of us are here. Tom Ackerman is here. And this is actually the second time in a formal setting, because Tom and I talk a lot, like off the air, in the sports office, in the hallways and all that. But this is the second time formally that Tom and I have talked today. And earlier, we did a podcast. Tom, was this an emergency podcast? Because I know it was like the gathering of the KMOX sports guys. It was you and Matt, Pauly, and me. We got together to talk about the weekend that I think has Cardinals fans freaking out.
It was an emergency gathering for sure. I think we called it Cards Therapy, just to kind of, you know, get everybody to just talk it out. Hey, let's do another one tonight, and that'll make it three in one day. You know, I don't know. We have another conversation.
Well, that'll probably just be Matt on the postgame. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll let him fend for himself. Unless they win, then he'll be fine. But even if they do win, I think the fans will still be a little irritated about what's been going on lately. It's been tough. I mean, you know, losing to the White Sox and losing twice based on what they've done all year, and it kind of felt like that was it. You had to get us together to talk things out with the fans and really, really get something out there.
So let's just go from the beginning. And for those that haven't listened, go to KMOX.com/Cardinals Conversations. It's all there. You can find Tom on Twitter or me or Matt. We've all been retweeting the links to the podcast. It's about a half an hour, so it's not a super long listen. But we can do the Cliff's Notes version of it here, Tom. We're talking about the offense mostly. It's not that it's the only thing that goes wrong. We'll get to the bullpen in a minute with the roster move. But, you know, the offense is the problem now. They only had, 15 hits in three games against the worst team in baseball, and that's over 26 innings of coming to the plate, so you're only getting a hit every other inning. Yesterday, only one hit of the four left the infield. So offense is the problem, and we've talked quite a bit about, like, what's behind that, and I don't know that anybody knows how to fix it.
No, no one really knows, and if we did, I think, you know, they'd probably hire us to be part of the
what
staff.
What if I told them I knew? Do you think they'd hire me then?
Yeah, well, they'd probably ask you for some advice, get you in there. You know, I think that we tried to figure out that really it comes down to, and you said it pretty simply, is that they can't hit the fastball. So I guess the solution is jump on the fastball. If you see one, the first tasty fastball that you see, go get it, because you know, teams maybe know the fact that they can't hit the fastball or that they're laying off the fastball, so maybe they're going to try to sneak one by the first couple of pitches, and it might be the only good one that you see. So maybe the solution for them is to not swing at the first pitch that you see, but to swing at the first fastball that comes your way, because you might not get another good one. And, you know, it has been a problem. Is it coincidence that they're all, aside from Arenado and Contreras, all going south at the same time? Or is this an approach that they've all been taking at the same time? Or is it contagious? It's hard to say, but it has been a major issue for this team. They cannot get not only the big hit, but they're having trouble just getting people on base for the big hit. I mean, yesterday they were 0-for-1 with runners in scoring position. They had one player, Brendan Donovan, get to second base on a wild pitch, and Contreras, of course, circled second base when he hit a home run.
Right. It's really hard to fathom. I mean, you can look it up. The numbers are available in all kinds of places, but they are really struggling against four-seam fastballs. And the problem with that is you see a lot of them. So if you're not hitting them, it's really difficult. And the weird thing, Tom, is I've looked it up. These same players that are struggling with the four-seam fastball now, so Arenado, even Nolan, whose numbers are above average, his numbers are decent. Wilson Contreras has great numbers. Nobody else has numbers worth a damn. But those two guys have been, you know, in Nolan's case, solid, and in Contreras' case, outstanding. But even Nolan's struggling against the four-seam fastball. He's only hitting 205 against it. Goldschmidt struggling with it. Gorman struggling with it. Almost all of these guys, Tom, hit the four-seam fastball last year and the year before. Like, if you keep tracking it back, something's changed, something's different. So it can't be the same for all of them, right? It's not physical decline for Nolan Gorman. He's too young. It's, you know, people could argue that about Goldie, but it doesn't appear to be that because he's actually not having any more trouble with the fastballs than any of the other guys. It's a fascinating thing, and I want to give a tip of the cap to our buddy Bernie Miklas, who had a real interesting note today with at Scoops with Danny Mac. He looked at, you know, the there's a categorization you can look up. I believe it's a Fangraphs number, but it's called a meatball. That is that fastball. That's the pitches right down the middle, basically, right? The Cardinals have the third lowest swing rate on those meatballs of any team in baseball, so they're taking too many good pitches.
Yeah, they're taking pitches, and, you know, a two-seamer and a four-seamer, just so people know the difference, you know, a two-seamer can move a little bit, can tend to get a little bite on it, and, you know, it can be a little tougher to pick up sometimes. I think a four-seamer, especially upstairs, sometimes they'll try to get you with a high fastball. I don't know. It's hard to say, Kevin. I mean, a fastball, is it taking them by surprise? Perhaps it is an approach that they are looking for something else. You know, it's hard to fathom because, as you mentioned, I can't imagine that anybody on this team, Goldschmidt included, are losing bat speed. You know, yeah. Any of the regulars, you know, are losing bat speed. I mean, maybe if you're on the tail end of your career, it can happen, but I don't see it with this team. So will that turn, and can you change the approach on a dime? And is that exactly what is happening? It's just hard. It does feel like it can't just be a coincidence that they're all falling at the same time to the same pitch.
Yeah.
It's not the only one. I mean, there are some other pitches, of course, that are fooling them too.
Sure.
Or maybe it's the fact that, you know, they did face some really good pitching for a while, and a lot of them possessed a fastball. I don't know, but it does. It's not the pitching; it is the Cardinals.
It is
the offense is just not there. And last year, it was an upper level offense, and I think on paper now it's an upper level offense. And it's not like you've put pressure on the offense either. Last year, you had a bit of an excuse in that the pitching was giving up so much that you almost felt like you had to score seven or eight runs if you're the Cardinals. Not now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're asking for four or five, and in the game, you're pretty much in it the way this starting pitching has been for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you mentioned the differences, two-seamer, four-seamer. Then, you know, two-seamers can all be a little different. Some are a little more vertical break with horizontal break. Some are a little more horizontal, but a lot of them are just categorized as sinkers. And these same guys that we're talking about with the Cardinals are destroying sinkers. Absolutely. Nolan Arenado's hitting 391 against sinkers. Contreras, 474. Burleson, 385. Mason Wynn, 350. I'm sorry, 450. Paul Goldschmidt, 375. So they're hitting the two-seamer, the sinker. They're hitting some other off-speed pitches. But obviously, you know, sliders, splitters, those things are tough for everybody, regardless of what team. But four-seam fastballs are kind of the bread and butter. They're about 30%, 35% of the pitches you see. So if you're not hitting those, which they're not, and they did in past years, it leads to a problem. And then the question becomes, how do you change it? Is it, you know, we kicked it around on the podcast. You can make the symbolic move of changing the coaching staff. I don't think it makes hitters swing at a pitch down the middle any more often. I just don't know how you're taking fastballs center cut.
Yeah, it's hard to say, you know, and is the pressure feeding on itself, meaning the worse that they go, are they now pressing more and more each time? Do they need to just go back to basics and just loosen up and have some fun and go out there and let it rip? I mean, should they be taking maybe fewer swings before the game? Maybe they shouldn't be taking as much BP. I think you can tinker with all kinds of things. You could just tell a guy like Paul Goldschmidt, hey, you know what? Today, no BP, no swings. You just stretch, warm up, and then get out there, and the first fastball that you see, you just hammer it. Or maybe it's that they are, and again, this is going to have to come from inside to get a good read if you're the leader of the team, the manager or otherwise, and say, you know what, this team needs to get lit up a little bit. I mean, we're gonna have to give the old, you know, flip the table over type speech and get this team riled up because this is unacceptable kind of a thing. You know, you got to be able to read what what it is. But you absolutely need to hold everybody accountable. Everybody's making a lot of money. Everybody's at this level to play. This isn't Little League. It's not college. It's not minors. This is big time, big league baseball, and you either do or don't at this level. And, you know, it does. Some players handle the pressure better than others. And is this a pressure thing, or is this simply an approach and they have to change the philosophy? I don't know that they have to change the coach, but sometimes that does happen. And it does take a change to get everyone's attention. I don't know what that might be. I know the only change that I've seen so far is that Giovanni Gallegos is going on the injured list, and he's not a hitter.
Right, right. And obviously, you know, you got Chris Roycroft coming up for, it'll be his major league debut when he gets in. Interesting profile. Not a guy that's gotten a lot of buzz over the years. He's not a top prospect or anything like that, but 6'8" guy that apparently throws hard and is having some success will get his first crack.
Yeah, it's good. You know, I want to see you want to see that. And, you know, I'd go down and take a little look around the system, and I don't see one right now that can come up and just change your lineup. But, you know, maybe a good contact hitter like Thomas Sejacy, you know, a good aggressive hitter who has great bat-to-ball skills. Just give him a little run for a little while at some point. Now, it's going to cost somebody their job for a little while. But you trot him up here and see if you can't get a couple of knocks and get something changed. And maybe that person is Dylan Carlson. You know, maybe Carlson, who played in his first game yesterday, gets a little chance to warm back up and he gets hot because he was their best here. You know, down in Jupiter, maybe we should have known. You know, maybe we should have known because the offense was pretty quiet down in Jupiter, except for Carlson and Contreras. Arenado was pretty quiet and a couple of others, but he's been better. But I think perhaps we should have seen signs of this in spring training, and we just kind of chalked it up to Roger Dean Stadium as a pitcher's park. But Sejacy was good down in Jupiter, and so if I were to dip down in there for a hitter, maybe I'd give him a run.
Yeah, and he's there. Not a ton of guys down at Memphis tearing it up, but he's been pretty solid. He's not been beating the door down, but it's good enough to at least maybe consider a possibility just to shake things up. All right, buddy, got to run. Thanks so much. We'll see if we have a need for an emergency podcast again here soon. Hopefully things start turning around tonight.
Yeah, definitely. I would never take anyone away from your show. However, if you want a good listen for 28 and a half minutes, our podcast is pretty good today, I would say. So just go to Cardinals Conversations, CamelX.com.
They can do that at 5:05.
Absolutely.
All right, so I have one more baseball thing I want to get off my chest, and I just want to throw it out to the two of you guys. Okay. Andrew got a sneak preview of it earlier, and I did mention it on the podcast. So if you want to hear like the full, I was a little rantier in the podcast than I'm going to be here about this subject, but it has to do with the Cardinals. It has to do with this kind of the current state of the team, and I don't know. It's not even a hot take. I'd call it a mild take. I think somebody with the team, whether it's Mo or Ollie or a coach or a player, somebody with the team needs to show the fans some emotion here soon. The reason I want to throw it at you guys, and obviously everybody listening gets what I'm saying here, is I'm not talking about firing up the players. I'm not talking about, you know, a rah-rah speech that's going to make them break out of their slump. That's not what I'm talking about. That stuff's all nonsense. This would not be a message for the players inside the clubhouse. This would be something that would translate to the fan base that shows the fans, not just tells them, but shows them that the people in the organization care as much as the fans do. So I use this analogy in the podcast, and this is where I want to see if you guys think I'm on or off, or it's a bad analogy. Because I equated it to any kind of relationship, friendship, marriage, dating, whatever it is. If you just say over and over to someone, you know I love you, right? You know, like if you don't show it, if you don't act like it, if everything you do is dull and emotionless and lifeless, does that work?
Not typically.
Not in general normal life, right? And what I'm talking about, again, is not about a method to get the players going. This has nothing to do with that. It's about demonstrating to the customer that you have the same passion for this relationship that they do. Because the Cardinals say that those things, right? They'll say, this is unacceptable. We need to be better. But you're saying it with no emotion. You're very dull and boring and dim about it. Do you guys think that's a ridiculous analogy to make?
I don't think so.
Or does that make sense?
No, I think it makes perfect sense. I think it would feel a lot better to the fans if they seem to be as frustrated by things as we are. And sometimes you got to be a little vocal about that. You have to be a little dramatic. Even if you are not necessarily feeling, even if how you're really feeling is, drat. Oh, this isn't good, huh? Fire it up a little bit. You know what I mean? Give us some, but we're feeling very passionate. So show us some of your passion. Be as passionate as the fans are and show the fans that you care as much as they do.
I think that
you want it as much as the fans.
In general, sports teams are bad at recognizing the fact that they're in a relationship with their fan base. And it's not just about saying the correct words. It's also sometimes about how you're saying it. Just like any other relationship. The words matter, but they don't matter as much as the feeling behind them. And I think Cardinals fans want to see more emotion and genuine anger from the people in uniform and in the front office and less of the blah, 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 stone cold, boring. We know we need to be better. Cuts Monday on TGS. Dave is out. He is helping Phoebe move back from KU after her freshman year, something that I've done with my daughter, who we did, I think, 5 move-outs. And then after that, she was kind of off-campus apartments where they had year-long leases, so we didn't really have to do anything dramatic. I know I did it 4 times as a student as well. So move-outs are always, they're always interesting. They're not always crazy. Sometimes, you know, we had some issues with getting things done in advance of me getting there. Hint, hint. My kid was a little bit of a procrastinator waiting for dad to help out. I wonder, Dave Murray, what your experiences were with the college move-outs at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah. You know, but just personally, I have an older brother, so we moved him out several times, you know, over a 4-year period of time. Same with me and with our son. Same thing, beginning and end.
Were they simple? Like, say, my move-outs when I was a student were, like, it's just me throwing my clothes in a couple of bags, and that's pretty much it. I didn't have much else. I think I had a TV and a video game system, and that was about it. Everything was pretty simple, but with my kid, it was like, oh, we got to take down all the stuff you put up on your walls, and we got to pack up the curtains. I didn't even know we needed curtains. I never had curtains when I was in a dorm. I didn't bother with them.
I'm not sure. I don't think I had curtains either. It was the same way. I think you basically would find a suitcase at home, pack up your clothes in that, and then I did have a small TV. I did have a cheap little stereo system. Yeah, those were the. I didn't have a computer. I didn't have a computer or anything like that.
I had a boombox.
And my treasured thing was a chalkboard that had a map of the U.S. so I could do weather reports. I did weather reports for the whole hall.
How big was that? Did it fit in your car?
Five feet long, 4 feet wide, it would fit in the car, fit in a station wagon.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, see, because like. For me, when I was moving, I mean, honest to God, my stuff would fit in like just a 4-door like car, or like a regular car. That's how much stuff I had.
Yeah, I remember. You know what? My folks I know moved me in freshman year. Moving out, because I had a car.
Yeah.
It was my hot Impala. sexy, man.
Look out, ladies. Here comes the... Well, now, in fairness, there are some eras of Impalas that were pretty sweet.
That's true. This was not one of them.
Okay. You got one of the in-betweens.
This was my aunt had the Impala. She drove it... You know, I've got to say it was probably somewhere in the 60s Impala. And she had it for years, and she had 17,000 miles on it. I mean, we're talking years.
Wow.
She had it. It had no paint left on it because it was outside. It was in Florida. And she said, do you want this car? And I'm like, yes, please. So she said, take it. It's all yours.
Very nice.
Good times. Good times. I'm trying to think of, like, I think most of it, like, moving in is a little bit different than moving out. But, like, to me, moving out, it was just like, how fast can I throw stuff in the car and go away? Like,
right.
I'm done with school. I want to leave. I want to leave now.
Well, I think that's true of like, going on vacation. You spend a little more time
packing. That's a good
point.
Yeah.
And when it's time to leave, it's you throw everything in the suitcase and say, I got to squeeze out as much time as I can here.
All right, Dave. So how's the week looking for us?
Okay. We've got two rounds of strong to severe thunderstorms, at least certainly unsettled weather. And then the pattern is going to break come late Wednesday night. So we're looking at stuff moving in late tonight. The evening is fine around St. Louis. No concerns. After midnight, and I'm really thinking the window of 4 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Tuesday, rain and thunderstorms will cut through here. Some of these things will be strong to severe, and I'll get to what we can expect here in a minute. 65 for the low. Tomorrow, rain and thunderstorms up until about 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, then becoming partly sunny, windy, warm, and humid, 85. All is quiet Tuesday evening, Tuesday night. Wednesday, the morning is fine, partly sunny, windy, 82 for the high. The next round of thunderstorms in the time frame of 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Wednesday. They'll be developing and developing rather quickly, and some of those will be strong to severe. The severe storms are not going to be for everybody, but where they hit, large hail, golf ball size hail, maybe even larger, damaging winds over 70 miles per hour, and the threat of isolated tornadoes. I think of the two systems, the one Wednesday afternoon into early Wednesday evening will be the stronger of the two, though the stuff that comes in towards morning is going to be a little bit on the strong side, too. We clear it out on Wednesday night, cooler, 55. Thursday is sunny, low humidity, 72 degrees, 68 for the high on Friday. Friday night into Saturday morning, 48 for the low. So that is close enough for me to be called our Blackberry winter. And it is right on schedule.
Nice. Well, I guess we get through the rough stuff, right?
Yeah, you know, it's like everything else. They're like six, you know, 5-6 hour windows. It's not going to be raining all the time. And again, not everybody's going to see it. But those two windows, 4 a.m. to 10 a.m. Tuesday, 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, we need to pay attention. We need to stay alert, stay up to date, watch the sky, be ready to do what we do here in St. Louis when strong storms move in.
All right, we pay attention. And what we do after we get done with the weather here on DGS, we do headlines.
Brought to you by Schnucks. Get your groceries delivered or use curbside pickup with the Schnucks Rewards app. Police are investigating after an Amazon delivery driver shot and killed an armed carjacking suspect in Cleveland on Saturday. Did you guys see this story?
No.
So an initial investigation showed that the Amazon driver was working when the suspect attempted to take his vehicle at gunpoint. So then, you know, things got confusing. No one knows exactly what happened, but the suspect was shot during the altercation and tried to drive away in the worker's vehicle, but crashed shortly after driving away. He was pronounced dead at the scene.
Jeez.
And police are investigating.
Hmm. That sounds all kinds of awful.
Don't carjack.
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Teens are being charged. Two Florida teens are facing felony charges after they were caught on video dumping trash into the Atlantic Ocean during a party.
It was pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
That video was pretty disgusting.
The 16-year-old and a 15-year-old boy, they were arrested on Friday about a week after a drone video of the illegal dumping went viral online. Both teens were arrested on third-degree felony charges, which comes with a fine of up to $50,000, up to 5 years in jail, or both.
All right. So I'm good with coming down hard on them for doing that. I didn't see the video, Dave. Is it pretty bad?
Yeah, that's too big. Yeah, I mean, they clearly had been drinking and they were throwing bottles and cans and associated trash. Too big, you know, large trash cans. You know, I'm just not even hesitating. Yeah, just dump it into the water.
I'm all for them getting what they deserve and what they've earned. That's fine. How are we coming down on the companies that just dump stuff in the ocean?
Yes, thank you.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
Only we get to take the trash out to the giant trash island and fill that up. Like, I'm not saying that it's fine for them to throw bottles and cans into the ocean, but the ocean seems to be where a lot of our trash goes anyway. So I So I guess I don't really get the punishment behind it. I wish none of us would do it at all, ever.
Oh, I'm fine
pollution
with
the ocean's a huge thing.
I'm fine with the punishment. If you're doing, if you're stupid enough as a teenager to get drunk and do that, then you are okay dealing with the punishment. Just like if you got into a car and got into an accident after drinking, you broke the law. You did it. I just would like to see the same energy longer term towards larger groups that tend to throw stuff into the ocean, because it doesn't just walk its way there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys seen this sports bar that only shows women's sports? Have you heard of this?
No.
It's called the Sports Bra, and it's, it's pretty good.
That's
pretty
great.
Good. All right, that's really well done.
And it's in Northeast Portland. Well, the reason why it's a story today is because just 2 years after opening, the bar announced plans this week to go nationwide through a franchise model. So maybe there will be one coming to St. Louis.
We're in a really interesting place right now, where there are more and more, I can't remember the name of it, and I feel terrible, but I think it's a TV outlet dedicated to women's sports that just kind of came online here within the last couple of weeks. Obviously, there was a lot of buzz about Caitlin Clark's run in the women's NCAA tournament. That has led to some buzz towards the WNBA. I think we're at a really interesting place. Does this stuff take off?
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, great. That'd be fantastic. Yeah. I know there are a lot of dudes that crap on it. I don't know why. Who cares? If it's not your thing, that's fine. There's nothing. Just like if baseball's not your thing, that's fine. You got other stuff. No big deal. But we're at an interesting place where there seems to be genuine buzz for it.
Yeah. You'd love to see it. And I'm excited that they're going to franchise, and hopefully they can make something great out of it. That's really cool.
Do you think they're going to have the dudes be servers in really small, tight, short shorts?
Oh, my gosh, I hope so. That would be amazing.
That's funny. No,
it's a sport you don't want to see.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, the ladies don't want to see that either.
Nope.
Final story here. A Massachusetts woman won a $1 million Massachusetts state lottery prize, and then 10 weeks later won the same amount again.
What?
She won both jackpots by playing scratch-off tickets she purchased at two different stores, and both times she opted for the $650,000 pre-tax cash payout option. The first time she won, she said she used some of the winnings to purchase an SUV. And the second time, she said she's going to put the money in savings. So that's crazy. Good for her.
I was going to say, at this rate, she should invest that in more lottery tickets.
Right.
She's on a roll.
Keep going.
That's Wheels advice.
No. That's what you would do at the craps table, right? Let it roll. I'm hot. See you, Dave.
All right.
All right, so we just have a couple minutes here before we get to the top of the hour news. Skip Weber's going to join us. We'll do the Sweet 16 of fictional foods. Andrew first told me about that, I'm like, you mean like people eat fake foods? And I'm like, and he's like,
you
no, dummy.
With that a little bit.
He's like, no, dummy. Well, I was driving, I wasn't paying attention. And I'm like, he's like, no, dummy. Stuff like you could see on a TV show. And I'm not going to give any examples because they could come up, but like,
they will come up, yeah.
Yeah, there are.
I had a harder time than I expected.
But things on like cartoons and sci-fi movies and things, there are fictional foods that are famous. Now that I thought about it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that is actually a thing.
It's a fun one.
And drinks apply too.
What's that? Oh, okay,
I've got drinks on my list. Don't worry.
Okay, very nice. Andrew?
Yeah.
I have not followed the Drake Kendrick beef. What's going on?
Oh, man, I don't know if I have time to go over.
Can you sum it up in 20 seconds?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
You know what? I can. It's stupid.
Am I wrong? It's getting dark is what it's getting.
It's
getting,
two grown men writing each other poems.
Yeah, well, sure. That's one way to put it, I guess. But it's getting dark. There are some very upsetting accusations being thrown back and forth.
Oh. Should I?
The two of them.
All right, so this is the way you can cover it in 20 seconds. Should I even bother finding out more? Is it worth it?
If you want the drama,
yeah,
I've been keeping track like peripherally, and it's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I've been also keeping track obsessively, and it's pretty entertaining.
Right, I'll mark that as a maybe.